When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to the Boiler Alert Podcast. With you, as always, I am your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I am Ronan Bonaparte.
And we are now the home of the 1-1 Purdue Boilermakers after a victory in Blacksburg that has to be a record breaker for end time for a noon kickoff, with the game ending somewhere around 9 o'clock. That was just an incredible day. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That's obviously going to be the bulk of the pod, but we've got some non-football sports news to open up the show. Ryan, did you get up at, 3 a.m. to watch Team Canada versus Team USA in the FIBA World Cup?
Sure, I'll pretend I did.
No, so you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to let the listeners have the illusion that you did.
Right. I am committed to everything sports, yeah, commit 24
to,
hours
commit today. To the bit, Ryan, you've got a role to play, right? Here. So yeah, Team Canada, Team USA. Team Canada, of course, has Zach Edey on there. He's not getting a ton of minutes, but that's understandable. I mean, there's a lot of NBA guys on there, a lot of professional players, and Zach Edey, of course, still in college here at Purdue, but he's been making an impact when he is in there. And this morning they played Team USA in the bronze medal game, because both of them could not make it into the final game for the gold, but that's okay. So it was a real mixed bag situation for most of us here. I believe most of us here are rooting for the USA. But, Team USA lost in overtime to Canada, and so that means Zach Edey wins himself a bronze medal at the FIBA World Cup, and the U.S. walks away empty-handed, which I believe is only the seventh time in 34 competitions that they haven't walked away with a medal. So something is amiss in the USA basketball camp. But how do you feel about Zach Edey walking away with the bronze?
Oh, I mean, he added another trophy and medal into his trophy case.
Yeah, this is a really rarefied thing, because Team Canada had not won a medal since 1936.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good, Zach Edey. Clearly.
Yeah.
But kind of moving past him getting another medal, it's showing that he can go up against these big boys and, clearly a level up of competition. And I don't think he missed a single shot.
Yeah.
Unless he missed one today.
These box scores are impossible to find. I went to ESPN and read the story about the game. There was no box score attached as of this morning. Went to NBA.com. There was no box score attached to the story. The AP, there was no box score attached to the story. But up until today's game, Zach Edey he only had taken 9 shots in the entire tournament, but he was 9 for 9. So, I mean, that's pretty good. That's about as good as you can be. And he's really taking advantage of his minutes. I will say, Team USA was down by 3 with, I believe, about 4 seconds left. They were actually down 4, went to the free throw line, made the first free throw, intentionally missed the second one. Zach Edey was in for the rebound, so he was on the right side of the lane. And upon the miss, the ball bounced his way, but he simply was a little slow getting off the line and didn't grab it. And it allowed Team USA to hit a 3 to end the game, and that's how they made it into overtime. But Team Canada dominated the overtime and won going away. But I know he was at least in the game for that part, because I did see that on Twitter. So I know he was in, but, even if he didn't get a ton of minutes, which we know is the case, he's out there playing against pros, playing against Team Canada every single day for a few weeks. I mean, that's going to be invaluable experience for him as he comes back to Purdue in the next few days.
Absolutely. So I actually did find a box score. He played 2 minutes and 18 seconds, did not take a shot, and had one rebound.
That's a very specific box score, 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
Yep. So, and one personal foul.
Okay.
But
I wonder.
They also have a guy named Phil Scrub. So for those people who say Canada is made up of scrubs,
you're partly not right.
Entirely wrong.
Yeah. I wonder if the one foul was the intentional foul to get Team USA on the line, but you never know.
Probably, yeah.
You never know. There's no downside for Purdue that he went out there and did this. Not only does he get the experience, he walks back with a bronze medal and gives Purdue that added, cachet of having a guy with a FIBA World Cup bronze medal on the squad, but also gave the team the chance to go to Europe without him and kind of get a feel for what could happen should they find themselves in a situation where he cannot play, allow guys to kind of get their footing in new roles that they may have to take on this year.
Yep, absolutely. I will say he did take some free throws, too. So
there you go.
There's that.
Yeah. So Congrats to Zach Edey. Unfortunately, it did come at the expense of Team USA. So Team USA needs to get it together because, obviously, we need them to win at the Olympics. But moving on, there was one other Purdue sport we wanted to highlight before we took our break, and that is the women's volleyball team, who obviously always doing incredible things on and off the court. But they had a game this weekend, actually yesterday, the same day as the Purdue football game, which would have been able to watch both, but then, delays. Purdue currently ranked number 20 in the nation, and they played Kentucky, who was number 19, won it in five sets, and, I mean, it was a squeaker. They won the first set 25-23, lost the second 19-25, then won the third 25-19, got absolutely blown out in the fourth, which always blows my mind when that happens in volleyball like this, 12-25. But then won the fifth and final set 18-16. So a lot of fight in this volleyball team. They've really had a good few days here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they're 5-2 on the season. They dropped two early matches to number 18 Creighton in Holloway. And then they also dropped a match to Loyola. So after those two, they have rattled off four straight victories, three of those coming against ranked teams in Kansas, Marquette, and Kentucky, with the first two of those actually coming in Lawrence, Kansas, on Kansas's home court.
That's tough.
I mean, it goes without saying, this is a very young team, so they're going to have wins and they're going to have some, losses that you don't expect, but the ceiling is the roof. Right.
Yes, so. that is the saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So they will play next Thursday, or this Thursday actually, against UCF as part of the Boilermaker Challenge, and they will also get to play USC, future conference rival.
That's
on
right.
On Friday. So as of now, neither of them are ranked. So, and they're both at home. So,
good.
And then
so,
that should take them to the end of their non-conference slate.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue continues to just be a great volleyball school. Dave Shondell always knows what he's doing. He's got great recruits, great team cohesion. And as of late, they've played a really impressive non-conference schedule, because I think in years past, we know the Big Ten schedule is going to be great just because of the quality of competition, but there's always a fear that you're going to be docked a little bit for a bad non-conference when it comes to NCAA seeding and ranking time. So I think Dave Shondell and his staff have done a great job of providing challenging teams, challenging matchups, and doing so as a way to boost the NCAA resume. So that is always a good idea once you go into the Big Ten season and you know you're going to face ranked opponent after ranked opponent, because the Big Ten is just the country's best volleyball school or volleyball conference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they play five top 10 games in conference slate, and that's currently. I mean, and then three more are in the top 15.
Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, I think at one point Purdue was like ranked 15th, but they were the 7th Big Ten team ranked. I mean, it was just outrageous. Mm-hmm. The Big Ten continues to be the premier volleyball conference. So we're going to go ahead and leave that there. We're going to take our break, come back and talk Purdue's victory over Virginia Tech 24-17. We'll be right back with you. And we are back. So we're going to talk about Purdue's victory over Virginia Tech, one of the just strangest experiences I've had watching a Purdue football game in a long, long time. Ryan, can I give you a little story time?
Of course.
Okay, so I had a friend, my wife and I have a friend who was actually in our wedding, and she was on a work trip, and she had a five-hour layover at the airport that is just down the road from us. So when we found out, we were like, hey, why don't we pick you up at the airport? You can come back to our place. We'll have lunch. We can take you back to the airport. So I knew I was going to miss at least part of the game. So I set the DVR because, you know, game started at noon. We were going to go to lunch. So I set the DVR, and I get an alert that the game is delayed. I'm like, hey, this is great. I'm not going to miss anything. So I go to lunch, enjoy lunch. The game starts while I'm at lunch, but I'm like, okay, I'll be able to catch up. And then I get another alert that the game is delayed again. And I, at this point, I don't know anything about the score. I don't know anything of what's going on. I have no idea even how much time has gone on in the game. So we get back to our house, and I have to take our friend back to the airport. So I take our friend back to the airport, drop her off. My wife and son are like, we're going to the library. You can meet us there when, you know, you're done. I'm like, all right, that's great. So I get home, put on the game to watch a little bit before I go, and I get to, you know, Purdue scores. I'm like, fantastic. Purdue stops Virginia Tech, 3-and-out. I'm like, this is amazing. They get the ball. They're driving, and there's like, I believe it was like 5:33 left in the first quarter, and they just delayed it again, and I'm like, I am all caught up, and it was like, I was an hour, I think, or so behind in real time, and I just had no idea what was going on. So then, of course, You run directly to the internet and go to Twitter, go to Facebook, look at official accounts and see what you can find. And it was just like, the game might start at 3, or they're going to make an announcement at 3. And then it was, well, they're going to make an announcement at 4 or 4:30 before ultimately determining that the game was going to start at 6:15. And so ultimately, I got to watch most of the game live just because of these delays. So it really worked out for me in that instance, but let me ask you this. Let's pretend in this world where we're making up here that you live an hour or two away from where this game is. You go to the game and there is a delay. How long are you staying before you head home?
Until they call it.
Oh, you are okay.
I have a slight counter story for you.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, when I was a senior in high school, we took a trip, or this is before my senior year of high school, we took a trip to Florida, and we went to the Daytona 500, or whatever it's called the second time they race at Daytona.
Okay.
You know, it's not the same name, whatever. And so my mom was a big Jeff Gordon fan. And this was the last time Jeff Gordon would ever race at that racetrack. So we went to the race, and it got rained out. I believe it was a 7-hour delay.
Oh, my gosh.
We waited the whole thing out.
You waited
out.
The whole time.
Yes, we ended up getting – and it was a noon race. So we waited the whole time, and I believe the race ended at 3 in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
So I will wait until they make it official that you have called the game or rescheduled the game. You know, especially if it's like on a weekend, it's like I don't have much else going on. It's worth it to me.
Yeah.
Be one of those guys in the ponchos just sitting in there, just holding out.
Yeah. And I always love when something like this happens because they show you the stadium and, you know, it's almost always, when it comes back after a long delay like this, it's always like maybe a third full of what it was.
Yep.
But there's always like those people who just stay in their seats. They may be like 40 rows up and like in the corner, but they're like, no, this is where I sit. I'm not taking a better seat because they're available. I'm going to stay right here because, by God, this is what I do, and this is where we're going to win from. It always cracks me up.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
And I know – this is unfair to ask you this question, but I have just a question in general. Did they re-enter Sandman?
I don't think they did.
That's why the result of the game was what it was.
Yeah, that's why they lost. And I have been to, you know, a lot of Purdue games at a lot of different stadiums. I've sat through the Purdue game when they played at Maryland. I think the first time they played at Maryland, and it just rained on and off the whole game, but never enough to cancel it. But I was also at the Purdue Eastern Illinois game on September 8th, 2007, when there was a 65-minute delay for lightning, lightning and rain. And it was so weird because they actually allowed people to, like, they told people to leave via the stadium, like the turf. So I was in the student section, and they're like, exit via the field. So we all had to, like, go down the steps, get onto the field, and exit, like, through where the team goes. And we all hung out in Mackey for that hour and 5 minutes. And it was very weird.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. They don't want you on the metal bleachers.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. Especially because, you know, lightning delay. But we were just kind of like, we're supposed to go on the field. And then, of course, I mean, they had all the security guards down there, like, arms crossed, trying to be tough, like, do not run across the field. But it was definitely one of the more interesting situations I've been in. I can't say I've ever had a 5.5 hour delay at any sporting event I've been to.
Yeah, so first time for everything.
Did you happen to see somebody at the press conference asked Ryan Walters what the team did during the delay?
I did not see it.
He said that some of, I think it was the defense, just sat around and played hangman for a while.
Okay.
So they must have had like a whiteboard or something, and a bunch of the defense was just sitting around playing hangman.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, that's a long time to play hangman.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't release the All 22 so you could have done some film sessions in that delay, you know. Just do that. Yeah. Have some fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, oh boy, 5.5 hours. I mean, it's so strange because, like, what do you even do when you, like, at a half an hour, you're like, okay, we're still going to get out there. It's going to be all right. After an hour, after 2 hours, after 3 hours, you're just like, you're probably starving at that point. Have you been snacking? Are you like, do I eat a whole meal? What is it going to mess up my routine? I mean, these are like, it's not like you and I sitting around for 5 hours. You know, we don't have to go back out there. These guys are like, they have routines, they have plans, they have, you know, intakes of food, electrolytes, water, you know, sports drink, whatever they're doing. They've got that down to a science, and then suddenly they got to wait around for 5.5 hours. That's just got to throw everything off.
Absolutely. And then they have a 10-minute halftime.
Yeah, where they didn't even leave the field.
Absolutely. Just throws every wrench into every trainer and nutritionist's plan.
I'm sure the trainers and nutritionists were like, no. Oh, yeah. Man. Like, and I also saw Ryan Walters in that same press conference said he spoke with the pilot for the Purdue plane, and apparently they told him, you know, as long as you leave by like 4 a.m, you'll be fine. So he was like, I was doing everything not to get this game canceled. I wanted to play. So he's like, I would have started as late as 1 a.m. to get this game in.
Wow. Incredible. Incredible.
So obviously Purdue was able to get things back again, back started. 6:15 was when we kicked off. And Purdue, you know, it was like a 3rd and 5, I want to say, when they got the ball back and actually started the game. Nothing ended up coming to that drive, but, I mean, you know, starting out, Purdue had one of the better drives they've had this entire year to go up 7-0. And, you know, most surprising thing about this really was all 3 of Purdue touchdowns came on the ground. And I don't know when the last time that happened was, but it has to have been a while ago.
Yeah, and 3 different people scoring them, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, another thing. Who knows when the last time that happened was?
Absolutely. So this is probably probably the most encouraging thing you could have is if it's a game that is completely rained out, you know, Purdue fans, we know how that used to.
Yeah. You'd lose the game. Yeah.
Yeah, we would cower at the sight of rain because we know we couldn't have a rushing attack. Well, 179 yards later, and we're looking pretty on the rushing attack. The rushing attack.
Okay, yep. Okay. I thought this was a whole different podcast for a second there.
Yes.
Comrade.
Yes, Devin Maccabee is from Moscow. So, I think that Hudson Card used his legs just fantastically. He had 12 rushes for 16 yards. That's not prolific. But he knew when to hold the ball, knew when to throw the ball, and it just looked better on offense today, or Saturday.
Yeah.
I was very encouraged by the offense. They spread the ball well. They got the running game going. Josh Kaltenberger did play. Garrett Miller played at least a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if he came back.
He did not come back after that long delay.
Okay. So, I mean, at least he got out there for a little bit. But, yeah, it was spread the ball, work the run game, and make the defense guess, essentially.
Yeah.
And they didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, that was huge. That was huge.
How important that is.
Yeah. And to your point about Hudson Card, it sounds like you think he knows when to hold him, knows when to fold him, and he knew in this game when to walk away and when to run. So,
yep.
For those of you that don't understand that reference, that is The Gambler. So, look that song up. But I mean, in this game, he was 23 of 34, 248 yards, no touchdowns, but he did have a rushing touchdown. And to expand upon your point, the three rushing touchdowns, Devin Maccabee had one, Tyrone Tracy Jr. had one, and then, of course, Hudson Card, as I just said, had one as well. And Maccabee and Tracy both had really great, really strong runs. I was amazed when I looked at the stats that Tracy only had four attempts for 51 mm-hmm. yards. It felt like he was more involved, but you know the stats say what they say, but only four rushes for him. He did have three receptions for another 14 yards, but he has really impressed so far this year. He really looks like he's bigger, stronger, and faster than he showed last year in his limited role.
Yeah, and I think it's almost like he's come out more as the RB2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he seems to have that backup role just because it's more of he's different than Devin Maccabee, you know, in what he brings to the offense, whereas Dylan Downing is a little bit more similar to Devin Maccabee.
Yeah,
and he's more powerful, but it's not like that gadget type plays.
Right, and Downing has struggled a little bit. He got six carries in this game for 22 yards, a long of just five, but overall, the running game is so much better than it was in game one, so you love to see that improvement. One other player who I thought really stood out in the receiving game was Max Clair, the backup tight end. He had eight receptions for 64 yards, including a long of 27, and he looked really good catching the ball. He, of course, made a very bad mistake that almost cost Purdue when he failed to get onto the field during a field goal attempt that forced Ryan Walters to call a timeout. Of course, as you know, fate loves to intervene. Purdue still kicked the field goal and made it, but of course it didn't count because of the timeout. Then with all 11 players on the field, Purdue kicks it again and misses the field goal. So it cost Purdue 3 points. So should Purdue have lost this game, Max Clair might have been in a lot of trouble. But as it is, you know, Purdue won by 7, so it's water under the bridge. But that is definitely something as a backup tight end, you don't want to be the guy causing the team to not only burn a timeout, but also to lose 3 points.
Yes. Now, looking at the box score here, there's a couple other receiving names that pop up before you get to Deion Burks.
Yeah.
Deion Burks didn't have a very prolific game. It's not that he was it's not that he had a bad game. It's just he was really taken as the number one threat.
Yeah.
and they bracketed him. So he had one catch for 18 yards, but he couldn't get the ball from Hudson Card just because the defense focused on him. And you saw that pay dividends to all of the other players. I mean, between Max Clair, TJ Sheffield, and Abdur-Rahman Yassin, they had 16 catches for over 170 yards.
Yeah.
So if that's what it takes, you love to see it. Obviously, you'd like to see more touchdowns, but if you're getting them through the ground, you'll take them through the ground.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think you and I are very picky as far as where the touchdowns come from. You know, I don't care if it's running, I don't care if it's throwing, I don't care if it's special teams. Just put the ball in the end zone. And I want to say one thing. Some of the Purdue fans online are, I want to find the best word to say this, without being too terribly offensive. They're whiny. They're whiny and they annoy me.
I didn't say insufferable.
Let me just give you one example. Purdue took that field goal, as I just said. They called a timeout when 10 people were on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're the coach and you see your field goal unit only has 10 guys, don't you think calling a timeout probably a good idea so you don't get that field goal blocked and returned? I mean, right. that's a logical reason to call that timeout.
Yep.
We had numerous people in our timeline and in our mentions saying, what a terrible decision by Ryan Walters. What a waste of a timeout. And yeah, hindsight's 20/20 because they made the field goal. But, you know, you don't know that at the time. And you just see 10 guys out there and you're screaming your head off because someone has made a mistake and you've got to correct it. That the choice to take that timeout is 100% justified. And just because they missed the field goal on the next flag or on the next attempt does not mean anything about whether the timeout was the right call.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the only questionable choice that I had for Ryan Walters.
You're talking about the fourth and one, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, let me hear your argument because I'm pretty sure we're on the opposite side here.
Okay. I understand the rationale. You just let up a touchdown. Your offense was, you know, a yard short of going three and out. So obviously you don't want your defense to have to, you know, absolutely go right back onto the field. I think it probably would have been better to punt. That's the only questionable decision that I'm going to bring up. This week I'm not on the same side as Coach Walters. That's okay. It's still a toss-up of a choice. There's no right and wrong. It just didn't work out.
Yeah, so this was in the second quarter, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right after Virginia scored their first touchdown.
That's
Virginia
right, 10. Yeah. Yeah, it was 17-7 at this point. Purdue on first and 10 got nothing. Second and 10, they got 5 yards. On third and 5, there was a 4-yard pass to Claire. Then it was fourth and 1 at the Purdue 34-yard line. And yeah. There was 4 minutes and 18 seconds left, and Purdue ultimately decided to go for it. They failed. My problem is not with the decision to go for it. I thought going for it was a great choice, a great decision. I think if you're going to win on the road, sometimes you got to make ballsy choices, and I thought this was a good place to do it because the offense had honestly looked really good. They'd scored 17 points to that point, and they needed to slow down the Virginia Tech offense because there was a bit of a spark, and you don't, whether you believe in momentum or not, they had found something and you don't want to keep giving them opportunities. So if Purdue had got that first down, I think it would have slowed everything down a little bit, even if only for another minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes of game time, and then you wouldn't, you know, I think it would have changed the complexion of the game. My problem was with the call itself, the decision to basically, it looked like it maybe Hudson Card had a few options, but ultimately out of the shotgun, ultimately tried to run for the first down. And I don't know if he was, if his main read was to keep it or to hand it off. I'm not sure if the running back at the time was Maccabee, Tracy, or Downing. But ultimately he kept it himself. He did not get the first down. I thought that was a bad decision from a play-calling perspective, but I thought the choice to go for it on fourth was good. And I'm just – I don't understand what this coaching staff is doing going from the shotgun on fourth down so often and then trying to run it. Like, I understand you can't simply only go in shotgun on fourth down when it's 1 yard away, because everybody knows what you're doing at that point. You know, you have to have some variety. You have to not allow the defense to know exactly what you're doing, but you've got to go under center sometime. You've got to figure out how you're going to do it to get a yard. You have to trust your offensive line at some point. And you think with the backup center in there, they maybe would have had a little more confidence, but I wish they would have chosen a different play call. But on this one, at least I see the other side. You know, that is something we can all disagree with, and that's fine. But I think so many of our fans on Twitter and on Facebook are just being needlessly hard and needlessly just kind of like outlandish for their expectations for head coach Ryan Walters. And I think it is something that people need to take a step back from. I mean, we've already seen people call for him to be fired because we lost to Fresno State. It's like, as I said, maybe even last week or a couple weeks ago, like, go outside and touch grass. Like, bring yourself back to the real world, because where you are living is not real life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, other than that, I think, you know, that kind of created, or it was a part of a stretch for Virginia Tech that was 17 points in about an 8-minute stretch. So they tied it back up, and they went into halftime tied at 17.
Yeah, I mean,
that stretch, the defense pitched a shutout.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
absolutely lovely job.
Virginia Tech didn't score in the second half. And I don't know if anybody would have predicted that. Not only, like, during the game, but before the game as well. It was certainly touch and go sometimes there in the third and fourth quarter. We thought there were going to be some problems, but, you know, they started the second half. Virginia Tech got the ball, only was able to get two plays off before Purdue grabbed an interception. You know, and it's – I think Gabby said this on Twitter – or no, it was in the quick wrap. The Purdue defense has found that the less time they're on the field, the better. So they went ahead and got an interception or something to that effect. And I thought that was really good. the teams traded then, I think, five punts or four punts after that. Purdue missed the field goal and then another punt. So the third quarter was not exactly a textbook offense or a clinic for the offense on either side. Lot of ugly football going on there in the third quarter before Purdue eventually did score in the fourth. But it was not a beautiful football game in the second half. I don't know what you can attribute that to. Short of maybe that's when the delay kind of kicked in. The adrenaline had been up for the restart. But, man, it was a wild, wild game. And defense, again, showed a lot of problems, but also a lot of promise. You know, they allowed only, I think, barely any rushing yards. I'm trying to get the exact number now. Only 11
on the game.
Yeah, 11 total rushing yards for Virginia Tech. They got in the backfield constantly, both on the quarterback and on the various running backs that Virginia Tech had back there. So that was great. But, you know, the secondary, again, had a number of mistakes. Cam Allen had a number of missed tackles. So, you know, it was good and bad. But, you know, ultimately, Purdue won the game. So you take a lot of that and just kind of wipe it away. I know that's not really how it should be done, but it is. Cam Allen got an interception. I believe it's like the 11th of his career. And Dylan Thiemann, second interception in two games. He's played in two games in his career. He's got two interceptions. So this young man might have himself a future on this ball club.
Yeah. And a very underrated play in the first half. Dylan Thiemann comes up on the sideline and is hitting. It's a legal hit. Hits a very, very strong hit on the ball carrier.
Oh, yes.
And the announcers are saying, that should be targeting. Is it targeting? What's going on? Was not ruled targeting, even though it was reviewed. Major, major swing in Purdue's favor there.
Yeah, yeah. Losing him would have made a big difference, I think.
Right. Yep. So, and that was before his interception. So obviously, he still had some big plays in him.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think he is really proving himself to be a key piece of this Purdue defense, but they really do. They've got to figure out a way to tighten up that secondary. It was another, 275 receiving yards, passing yards in this one for Virginia Tech. Yeah. And I just, do you happen to remember what the announcer said when Kyron Drones, the transfer from Oregon, came in and completed two passes?
I think I know. I can't remember verbatim.
They just acted like this guy was the second coming. They're like, he came in after, 9 hours. He hasn't warmed up since before noon, folks, because he came in on their last drive, and he completed two slants, right away. Ended up with, 32 yards, but then 0 for 5 on his next five passes, and ultimately came to nothing, and it, turned the ball over. So it was just so funny because these announcers were just like, oh my God, look at this guy. What an athlete coming in after 9 hours on the sideline and then suddenly just marching Virginia Tech down the field. And it's like, well, they got to midfield and then stalled and nothing happened. It was very bizarre. As a lot of people had pointed out, ESPN very angry, I think, at the Big Ten. Probably rightfully so, for not giving them any of the media rights in their new deal with all of the various other TV networks. And I think that ESPN is just kind of dumping on the Big Ten, and we're just gonna have to see the brunt of that when we play on any of the ESPN family of networks in the near future. But hey, you know what? That's all right. If that happens, we'll take the extra $30 million a year that we're getting by not having ESPN and take that right to the bank and laugh as we cash the check.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple players that I did want to shout out.
Yeah, love it.
We haven't really mentioned. Nick Scorton.
Yes.
Got his first sack of the year. 3.5 tackles for losses.
He had
five total tackles.
And that last sack was absolutely huge. I mean, that basically killed the momentum that Virginia Tech had there at the end.
Absolutely. So he got back there a lot. And then the other one is basically the other side of the ball from in Kydren Jenkins. Those two look like absolute units just going after the quarterback, and they are playing fast, and it's seemingly making a big difference. Now, did that force the quarterback into a lot of bad throws? Maybe not, but still, big plays don't come every play, so you got to make it worth your while when you can.
Yeah. That Scorton sack was huge because that took them, I think, from a 3rd and 12 all the way back to a 4th and 25, and that killed any chance they had of believing that they could go for it, convert, and try to get that touchdown. So that was absolutely huge for Purdue. And as you said, it was his first sack of the season, but he did a great job getting in the backfield all day long. So I think the biggest thing in this game is really the improvement from game one to game two. I mean, I know it is something that everyone talks about. You never know what you're getting in game one. That is why so many schools hope that they get a patsy in week one, because even if you don't have everything put together, you can still walk out of there with a win if you're playing an FCS team or a really, really bad team like Purdue did last year in, UConn. So that is why playing Fresno State week one is a little bit more difficult than we would have liked. But seeing the run defense improve, seeing the run offense improve as well in week two really gives me hope that this team can continue to build upon what they're doing and truly become a more put-together team as we get closer and closer to the Big Ten season. So I was really excited with the secondary getting those turnovers, because if they're going to be a secondary that allows a lot of yards, they have got to find a way to make big plays when necessary, and they've done that now in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that there are some on the intersphere that believe that Purdue's last game, not even all of their points were legitimate. Just because of the fact that one was on a big play, one was on a kickoff, one was set up by a punt. You know, those kind of people. You love those kind of people, right?
Yeah,
said with massive air quotes.
Right.
Purdue's points in this game, every single one of them came on a, you know, a big drive, right?
Right. Yeah, and there wasn't one, you know, 87-yard play or, you know, an interception return or no special teams returns, anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So they had legit points, if that's even a term. So
I don't think it is, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah. First drive, 9 plays, 75 yards, and a touchdown. That's called marching. We like when Purdue marches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's just it's an absurd argument people made. It's like, well, if we didn't have that Deion Burks 80 whatever yard touchdown, look at what we did. Okay, but we did have that touchdown. Like you can't take it away because it's a big play. Big plays happen all the time. You can't rely on them for sure. I mean, yeah, if that's your argument, everyone agrees. But they do in fact happen. So you are obviously thrilled when they do. But it's just wild the arguments people make to try to discredit anything that Purdue can do. So just absolutely wild. Yeah. So I'm going to give you one more chance. Anybody else or anything about this game you want to talk about?
No, not much. Maybe their penalties. They had 7 penalties, which is it's not awful.
They were consequential penalties, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So clean that up a little bit, but there's always something to improve on.
Yeah.
Like we said, they didn't fumble the ball once. They did not throw an interception. That is massive. They have not had a turnover in either game, and their turnover differential is +3.
Yeah.
I think that's the sign of a well-disciplined team, and that is something that Jeff Brohm's teams didn't seem to have always.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they of course, had the huge problem with penalties as well. But I will say, I think the second roughing the passer penalty, I thought that was bogus. The Purdue defender, and I cannot remember who it was called upon, he dove at the quarterback. Was it Thieneman? He dove as the quarterback still had the ball, hoping to get there before, you know, he threw it to get a sack, or if nothing else, you know, take a little something off the ball so it would be incomplete. He dove as the quarterback still had the ball, and then, of course, he threw it. And then because he was tackling at his legs, they called him for a roughing the passer, and I just think that's a terrible penalty. I understand the Brady rule and trying to protect quarterbacks. You can't tackle them high. You can't tackle them low. You can only, you know, hit them in the midsection. And I get you're trying to keep people safe, and we need to do as much of that as we can. But as my brother always says, my one brother who played football, you know, do these guys not understand physics? These guys are running around and cannot stop on a dime. Once somebody leaves their feet to try to tackle somebody, they're in the air. There's nothing they can do about it. Doesn't mean there's an ill intent behind it. That's just the game of football.
Yep.
Yeah, so I really do agree with you. I hope they get those penalties cleaned up, but no turnovers through 2 games is a great thing. So, Ryan, I'm glad we could talk about this one. Glad we got this game in after that long delay.
Yes.
And now Purdue is 1-1, and we're getting ready next week. We got Syracuse, right, Ryan?
Yes, we do.
We got the Orange. So we should have additional podcast guests. Middle of the week, we're going to record with some folks from Syracuse, also part of the Fans First Sports Network. So we'll talk about the Orange, talk about maybe a little bit of last year's game, and what we can expect from Purdue and Syracuse when they meet up this coming Saturday. Boiler up.
Yes, sir. Hammer down.